This is Great Opening Lines. Here's our panel description. Call Me Ishmael. A great opening line hooks a reader and keeps him turning the pages, or her. Panelists discuss some of their favorite opening lines and give you tips on how you can craft opening sentences that will capture the attention of a reader and hopefully an agent and an editor too. And then there's us here on the panel. Since I'm moderator, I'm just going to lay down some basic ground rules. If you came in late, please turn off your cell phone, because it's terribly distracting, especially for those of us that are a little scattered to begin with. We're telling our story, cell phone goes off, everyone goes, ooh, because they know you're going to attract our wrath. And then after the little clamor settles down, I cannot remember what I'm talking about. And then I'm embarrassed and I feel really irritated. Exactly. See what happens to everybody's attention. And I kind of feel the urge to dance to him sometimes. And none of us wants that. I mean, really, you don't want to see that. The other thing is, what I think we'll probably do is we'll start up here with the panel. We'll all introduce ourselves briefly. We'll all talk about some opening lines that we think are good opening lines. We'll all kind of maybe give some advice. We'll ask some questions. We'll keep it mostly up here at the beginning. Then we'll throw it open to questions from the audience. Questions from the audience, which I will select with a politely raised hand. You'll ask the questions. We'll do some answers, or at least some fairly good guesses as to answers. And we'll go from there. If, at the very end, we have extra time, we will maybe throw it open to comments or opinions from the audience. But for the most part, because we only have 50 minutes, I'm going to keep a fairly tight leash on this. Also, if we start to get off track, I'll try to rein us back, unless it's really interesting, and I might let us wander just a little bit. Last rule is maybe two rules here. I'm going to do my best to keep everyone from interrupting anyone else. That means people on the panel, please don't interrupt each other. People on the audience, please don't interrupt us. And I'll do the same favor for you. If you're asking a question or clarifying a question, I'll keep anyone from on the panel from interrupting you. That way we're all friends and everything moves very smoothly. The corollary to the don't interrupt is maybe please don't ramble. That's the hardest part of the moderator's job. Somebody gets the bit in their teeth and they're talking and talking and talking and talking. It will be my job to maybe step in and say, I think we got you. You know, any other comments? That's a hard thing for a moderator to do, but it will be my job because, again, we only have 50 minutes. 45 minutes. We also will be getting out of here 10 minutes early because I know you all have other places to be, maybe other panels to get to. If you want to drink a water in between, that's fine. There are our rules. And so we will introduce ourselves from the far end down.
Hi, I'm Brad Bullier. I'm a writer of, well, science fiction and fantasy. I tend towards fantasy. I have some dozen short stories out in the market, and the next one coming up is in Spells in the City, which is out later this year, December, I think.
Hello, I'm Paul Jeunesse. I'm a writer of fantasy and the author of the Iron Dragon series. Dragon Hunters, book 2, just came out. Golden Cord came out last year near Gen Con.
I bought it. It's good.
Thank you. I've sold 9 short stories, mostly to Daw Books. I'm the editor of the Writer Symposium e-zine, which is a free e-zine, comes out about 4 times a year. I'll keep you updated on what the symposium members are doing and, you know, new releases, and it has a couple articles on writing generally in each issue. You can sign up in the little sign-up sheet that's going to be going around. And thank you, Pat, for the rules.
Oh, yeah.
My name is Gregory Wilson. My day job is I'm an associate professor of English at St. John's University in New York City, and I'm also an author. My first book came out actually about a month and a half ago now, called The Third Sign, which is sitting right in front of you. I have a few other novels now which are on submission, and I'm also co-editing with John Helfers, who's around here and Paul knows, an anthology of short stories, original short stories on the intersection between politics and speculative fiction. And it has a lot of big authors in it that we're very excited about, and so that's the other hat I guess I'm wearing here at this convention.
Big, like they sell a lot, or they're actually like
no, like they sell a lot.
Oh, okay.
Tried you too, but you couldn't.
I'm big, you know. My name's Pat Rothfuss. My first book came out a couple of years ago, The Name of the Wind, and I'm the moderator, so I'm sorry. So let's maybe start by talking, let's start on the good side. Are there, you know, opening lines that we can remember that served a particularly good purpose, you know, what we remember and then why we like them a little. So what do we got?
I've got one. See if you guys remember this one. In a hole in the ground, there lived a hobbit. Yeah. 1937, J.R.R. Tolkien. I mean, I don't know about you, but I can't ever forget that one. I mean, it's just so cool. I mean, we're going to talk about opening lines that maybe have a little bit more of a hook. They really get the hooks in you and you can't stop reading. That one is great in some ways, but we're going to talk about the various different kinds of great opening lines. So I really, really like that one. I think one of the coolest opening lines that I've read recently is by an author named John Scalzi. And here it is. I did two things on my 75th birthday. I visited my wife's grave, then I joined the army. That's in Old Man's War, yeah. 2005. So I think a great opening line is a thing of incredible beauty if it's done well. And if it's done well, it just makes you want to buy the book. But if you open that first chapter and it's like really what you think is a crappy opening line, you immediately put it down. At least I do. And I've made it a habit now for the past 5 or 6 years at least, maybe longer. Every book that I pass, I pick it up, not in the bookstore like, you know, in Barnes & Noble, but if it's like my friend's got it on their desk or whatever, I'll go, oh, look, you know, and I'll read the opening line and I'll see what it's all about. And if I really like it, I will make a note to go back to that later if it's appropriate, you know, and steal their book and keep going. So I think that's my opening gambit.
I'll throw out another one. all the ones that I have, by the way, are from a collection of short stories from Orson Scott Card. Not his stories. He was the editor, and they were the greatest of the 20th century kind of thing. So extra credit if you can guess who wrote it. These are all short stories. The wind came whooping out of the eastern darkness, driving a lash of ammonia dust before it. In minutes, Edward Anglesley was blinded. That was from Paul Anderson's Call Me Joe. And I think what this one illustrates, and the reason I like it is, and I think this is a mark of a good opening, not necessarily the only mark. It immediately sets setting. It like really draws you and sets you into place. Hopefully time as well. I mean, I think there's some of that going on there too. You know, sort of a science fictional element, you know, sort of far flung with two sentences. You know, that was great. So for me, that's one reason I like this, and I'll talk as we kind of bat things back and forth about some other marks of good openings.
One of the things, there's two that I'm going to throw out. From one who's better known and one who's lesser known. And I'm using it as an example of something I hope we'll have a chance to talk about what function these opening lines have. The first one is by a writer named Damon Knight, who may be familiar to people here, who wrote one, and this is actually both a short story and then an example he used in a textbook, which I sometimes use when I'm teaching students of mine back at St. John's. The last man on earth sat in a room waiting for nothing. It's a tremendous sentence in part because it does so much with each portion of the sentence. The last man on earth, waiting for nothing. Why? What is he doing in the room? What made him the last man? That sort of thing. Damon Knight then goes on to say, suddenly there was a knock at the door. I would love to include that, but that's cheating. That's sentence two. But the opening sentence has a lot of weight associated with it, I think. A second one is by a Canadian writer. His name is Minister Faust, who opens a section of a book, The Coyote Kings of the Space Age Bachelor Pad, I believe is the name. And it's a great, both it and From the Notebooks of Dr. Brain, which is a self-help book for superheroes, is very, very good. But the opening of this one I'm thinking of is, every time they found him, it hurt. Both of those sentences have two things going for them, I think. They are very simple, syntactically, but they are contextually charged. And combining those into an opening sentence, I think, is very important, because you don't bore the reader, you hook the reader, you interest the reader, and you do all of it with a very powerful yet simple message in those opening sentences. So that's what I think the best opening lines do. They combine simplicity and power, and I hope we'll have a chance to talk about that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. There's a bunch of different ways you can approach this concept of a hook. But if you are talking just about the first line, and maybe we'll broaden it up a little bit to talk about maybe the first page or something like that, because focusing exclusively on the first line is really, you're in danger of losing the forest there. But I think for a certain type of hook in that opening line, that short, simple sentence, because you can write a sentence that's 150 words long, if you're clever and you know how to use a semicolon. Or if you're really not clever and know how to use a semicolon, you can do it too. But is that really an opening line? I think it's that certain type of really effective one has that terribly short opening line that says a little and implies a lot. The one I always remember when I think of opening lines is from Joan, I always want to say Vinge, but I think it's Vingy. Vingy?
I think it's
Vingy. Vingy? Joan D. Vinge or Vingy. I know her. It's so embarrassing to not be able to pronounce her name. It was from Scion, and it's the gem-colored dream shattered and left him gasping on the street. And I go, oh, well, I guess I'm in. You know, it's like something obviously is going on.
Yeah.
The other one, there was the one that Tim Powers mentioned in a workshop where somebody was talking about how they would start their novel if they ever wrote a novel. And then he did actually go on and start one like this, and it was bang, 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 bang. Five shots tore into my groin, and I was out like a light. And like there as well, you're like, well, okay. Although technically, if those bangs are followed by exclamation points, maybe only the first bang is the sentence, but...
not semicolon.
Yeah, bang, semicolon, bang. Just doesn't have the same effect. I also remember a great one by Patricia McKillop that said, they said that he rode into town on a horse the color of milk, but I saw him come out of the wood. I read that line and I'm like, oh, how dare you? I mean, what a great line. Because it tells you so much more than it actually tells you. There's much unsaid. You're implying a whole story with that little line. And what a great line. But then again, bang, bang, bang is going to catch some readers. And, you know, they said he came into town on a horse the color of milk. He's going to catch a different sort of reader. Those are different sorts of hooks. Now, do any of us have particularly, I did not search out any really bad opening lines. And unlike good opening lines, bad ones don't necessarily stick in your head. So maybe that was kind of my thought, if we could talk about that next. How about instead of talking about specific bad opening lines, how about let's talk maybe about what we find not terribly effective when people use that as their opening gambit?
I Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I think, and I said this in the last panel, I think when we rush, and I think rushing is a problem that a lot of beginning writers have, where they want to tell you, they're so excited, I have the story. I'm going to tell you what's happening in the story right now. And this can be sort of reduced to the chapter level, to the paragraph level, and even to the sentence level. So that if you tell someone literally everything that is going to happen, right, in, you know, the next paragraph, if you give them all the information, and there's one that I'm thinking of, and I can't remember the specifics of it, but it was a fantasy novel, and it involved, you know, adventurers wandering through the landscape. So that's, you know, that's really not shocking. But it was something like, you know, for 3 weeks and 3 days, they had traveled across the same unending landscape, mountains extending into the distance, while all the companions looked at each other, having run out of water. And, you know, oh my God, you know, enough. Like, let the story breathe. That's almost the anti-hook, because you might get done with it and think, well, I've read the story now, you know, and close it and put away, which is not the point. So I think the sort of great sin in bad opening lines is when they rush, when they tell you too much too soon, and when you almost don't trust that your reader is going to like it enough. I better give them everything right now just in case they close the book. That's going to make them close the book, you know. And so it's sort of the opposite of the simple, says a lot, you know, without saying much that we talked about in good opening lines.
When I teach writing to a lot of like fifth and sixth graders. It's like so much fun. If you ever get the chance, go for it. And one of the things that we immediately speak about is, you know, coming up with a character, you got to have a great character. But then the next thing is you have to come up with a great first line. You need a hook. And I often say, don't use a cliche unless it's a comedy story that, you know, you need to use, you know, it was a dark and stormy night. You know, and we talk about that. So I think trying to avoid cliches is overall just good advice with your opening line. And reading a lot of opening lines, like I kind of mentioned when I first began, is a good idea because you're going to get a feel for it. Yep. You know, and another thing, depending on the genre that you're in, they have, it seems to me at least, they have different styles of opening lines. Sometimes in a romance, it's quite a bit different than in, say, a hard SF book. It's just, it's a lot different. And some pop books out there, you know, that make certain lists, I read their opening lines sometimes, and occasionally they're killer, awesome opening lines. But other times I find they're just incredibly dull, and they have no hook at all. And I think, how did this make it onto the list? You know, how did this get on the New York Times bestseller list? It's got a crappy opening paragraph. There's got to be something great there. So my point is, depending on the genre that you're in, things are going to be different. And I encourage you to look at different genres and see how people do it. And some of my favorite opening lines are for thrillers. I don't know if you know what I mean. But sometimes, man, they start right there and get you. And I've been accused of being heavy-handed in some of my opening lines, because I usually go right for the jugular vein and try to tear it out and eat it right there. And that can be bad. It can be. I think some of the best opening lines that I've ever read is actually in horror. And wow, those people, they don't have any limits in general. You know what I'm saying? Like, they can do whatever they want in that first line. And only, you know, 500 people may buy the book because it's just a subgenre. But sometimes, bam, they got you right there.
Yeah, I'll say a couple of things. And Paul just touched on the first one. You'll hear this term in writing, in medias res, which means in the middle of things. And so it's an indication of where you are in a story. And one of the maxims you'll hear is that you want to start your story in medias res, right? And so what this speaks to is starting your story at the right place. It's fairly easy to start too early, and then you're filling in backstory that's really unnecessary. It's also really easy to start late, and then you're rushed. You're trying to fill in all the stuff that they should have known, and then moving on with the story. So you do yourself a huge favor and your story by picking the right place. Paul mentioned thrillers. Thrillers often start, I mean, like really right when the action is going, or even the action has been going on for a while and they're just picking it up, and you're just swept away, right? It doesn't work for all stories. Other ones are right on the precipice of action, so there's a lot of,
right,
I don't know, mood or import, right, of the section that they're opening the story with, and then it's downhill from there. You know, they're just cresting the ridge and zoom, they're going down. So to choose the good opening line is much, much easier if you can find that right place to start your story. That's definitely an art. That's something that comes with time. But, you know, again, you know, look at some of your favorite stories, and you'll see that they've done it. Right? So keep that in mind. And then playing off of something that Greg said, I think part of the issue of maybe explaining too much is trusting the reader. You know, this is a difficult thing too. It's hard to sort of let go. You know, as writers, we want to explain all of the stuff that we've thought of so that we're sure that the reader understands everything. But that's actually a bit condescending and unnecessary. You know, think about your favorite stories. The ones that where you pick up on things that are unsaid, you really feel satisfied. And that's what you have to do with your reader. So leave things unsaid, hint at things, and that makes them sort of enigmatic you know, curious, right, as you're opening the story. And that will pull readers in much, much more than trying to lay everything on the table right from the get-go.
Just to play off that, I do think it's very natural to obsess about your opening line. And if you obsess about it a little bit, that's good because it shows a willingness to revise and an attention to detail that will serve you very well as a writer. The downside is I've known people who have read and judged like short story contests, and they have a hoot laughing at all of these opening lines where the person is obviously like, this is turned into like a poem or something, where you kind of want to know what game you're playing. And part of that is knowing where your story starts and picking the right moment. And part of it is also deciding what your payoff to the reader will be. Because your opening line can't do everything. It can't establish a scene and action and a character and some lyrical language and if you try, you're bound to fail. And in that particular instance, the best you can hope for is the fact that you fail in an amusing way. and that's only going to help you if you're writing like a humor story. So again, I think, you know, simplicity, knowing what game you're trying to play is key, and knowing what you want to achieve. Also, sometimes, and I think this is important as well, you want that great opening line. Sometimes your story is not such that you can have that in media res opening line, or the questioning opening line, or the lyrical opening line. You know, I struggled with mine for a long time. My opening line in the book is not rock star. I really wanted it to be. My opening line is, it was night again. That's the opening. I would look at it and I'm like, God, this really is not exciting. It doesn't engage readers. There's no character. It's not lyrical. It did none of these things. But realize that you have several different places in which to set a hook. There isn't one hook in your story. The title is an opportunity to set a hook. I think of it more in terms of engaging reader curiosity, which is really the same thing, but it's a little less gruesome. I keep thinking of a fish hook in a reader's mouth, and it's not appealing. Your cover is going to be another one of these things. Your opening line is important, but, you know, your second line is really important, too. That opening scene is really important. And if your opening scene is really great, your opening line, there's not that much weight on the opening line. Now, ideally, you want all of them to be perfect, but if you put too much emphasis on the opening line to the detriment of your opening scene or chapter, it's like you have the perfect line, and all you have to do is then explain it for 3 pages. No, then you've fallen from the way. It's going to actually hurt you more than it helps. And just a great example of what you mentioned before, with the opening line that tells so much of the story that there's no more story to tell. If you've ever read Fragile Things by Neil Gaiman, and I think the story was called A Chair for October. They're all sitting around the fire, and the one girl says, well, what about the story where there's a man? And she just kind of da-da-da-da-da, and in 30 seconds she kind of describes the story, and they go, yeah, tell that story. And she goes, I just did. And this is probably going to be my mantra over the whole con, but somebody asked me what storytelling was. What's the key to storytelling? They were looking for the heart of it, the trick. And normally, there is no trick, and you have to say, well, you just have to work at it. There's a lot of different things you consider. But really, I think this is the heart of it. Bite size. Storytelling is the art of keeping secrets. At least a certain type of storytelling. My storytelling is the art of keeping secrets. And so sometimes in that opening line, you don't necessarily want to have somebody shot in the groin. That's not a secret-y opening line. Somebody said it before, less is a lot of times more. And you were starting to say something?
Well, actually, I was about to use the example of Name of the Wind. to say, for two things, playing off what you and then Brad said. First of all, not all hooks are created equal. And I think that I think, Brad, you talked about this before. We're going to broaden this a little bit beyond just the opening line, as Pat said. Pat said we can, so that's okay. In these opening sentences or in these opening lines, it does not necessarily have to be the case that to hook the reader, to interest the reader, to involve the reader, that you have to have them dodging bullets, leaping off cliffs, you know, avoiding laser guns, you know, whatever the case may be. What you need to do instead, if you're not going to hook them that way, is to substitute anticipation, tension, which is what you were talking about before. The what is going to happen, the potential energy, if you will, of the upcoming plot. And Pat's Name of the Wind is a good example of this, because although it starts with this line that Pat says is in Rockstar, the opening of Name of the Wind is really brilliant in that it begins to introduce you to this character, Kavoth. You don't even know that he's really being introduced at the beginning by talking about something that he isn't. It's talking about silences. It's talking about what kinds of silences exist and how there are different sorts of silences. And as you begin to read it, you're thinking, what the hell is he talking about? What? Okay, where's the silence? You know, and then all of a sudden you're reading, and like, oh, there's this guy who's with this silence. Well, what happens to this guy with the silence? And then you pick up the book and you buy it, and Pat's guest of honor at Gen Con. not all hooks are created equal. In part, what you're doing is creating this kind of momentum. And you're developing momentum from the opening line, but you're not doing it just with whiz-bang nuclear explosions. In fact, I think, if you always open your books, your stories, whatever, with the whiz-bang, you have no place to go from up, in a way, right? I'll give an example from music. There is a famous opera called Mephistopheles. The opening, the overture to Mephistopheles is 20 minutes. It is unbelievable. It is calls for this choir of 200 people, and there's this orchestra of 600, and it's, you know, and it's unbelievable, and there's devils and demons and all this stuff. And then they get to the end of it, and they finish with this big note, and everyone's kind of like this, and then there's 3 hours of opera. But at that point, you're like, you know, you're like, I'm done, you know, like, what else are you going to do? And then the theater blows up. Like, what can you possibly do to elevate the energy level from that opening? And so not all hooks are created equal, and I think if you could create this sense of momentum, this sense of build from the opening sentence, you know, on forward, you can then hook the reader that way. The second thing I wanted to mention off of what Brad said is about trusting the reader, which we talked about before. I think, and I want to use the Star Wars example for a moment. I used this in the last panel, too. When you walk into that wretched hive of scum and villainy in Mos Eisley, right, and you walk into this, you know, this the cantina, here's what would have not worked. If Obi-Wan brought Luke in, and then Luke said, oh, look, and Obi-Wan said, never mind, we got to go meet Han Solo right now, and he brought them right over to the table, the camera focusing right behind them, almost Law and Order style, and then had them sit down, and then they start talking about the Millennium Falcon with Han. We don't know what's going on outside the cantina. We have no idea who else is there. What Lucas does instead in Star Wars, when they walk into this, you know, wretched hive, is the camera has these little vignettes, right? There's this blue elephant guy, and there's this hammerhead guy, and there's this guy going, oh, at the bar, and you don't know who he is yet. And then there's this, and there's that. And it's just brief. It takes probably 15, 20 seconds, maybe, at most, of that opening film. And yet you are immediately given the sense that you are part of this larger universe, that there is this larger world, there is this opening to something that you don't even know all the details about, but exists out there for you to find. And then you are brought over to Meenham.
If, as an author, you are determined, bound and determined, to drag your reader kicking and screaming down a tunnel of a plot, and there's no sense that the reader ever has that, but wait, I want to look over at that, nope, never mind, we've got to get on to the next stage, then you are going to make your reader feel more like a kindergartner than an actual adult. Trusting your readers from the very opening line through the opening sections of your book and on forward is extremely important, and it's scary, as Brad said. You have this sense that, but I want them, but what if they don't get what I meant when I thought about, you know, they will, and even if they don't, it's okay. It is not your obligation to read for them. That's up to them. So trust your readers.
And yeah, just to throw out a statistic, which I'm going to repeat, even though I have not verified it like a good scientific person should. I heard it when I was in grad school. They had broken down readers according to the genre that they preferred, and they, like, assessed their reading level, which is kind of a bullshit assessment, by the way. Like, you know, your grade level that you read at or whatever. But they did break it down, and they found out that fantasy readers actually topped this chart, and that your average fantasy reader read at a college level. And, like, nothing is written at a college level. Like, no books or magazines are, because it's the kiss of death, because that's really hard stuff to read. Very few people read Kant, you know, like, on the toilet. You know?
If they do, they're not here.
Right. But the fact remains that fantasy readers, fantasy and sci-fi kind of lumped together, these are people who, generally speaking, are willing to give you the benefit of the doubt for a couple of chapters. They're used to the established, like, having to learn about a world while they're getting into a story. So you do have, now again, don't say, oh, well, Rothfuss said I can take 100 pages to describe my world. Because now one of the main criticisms of Tolkien is the fact that those first 120, 130 pages are really slow. Really, really slow. Because he's doing all this world building. He's front-loaded his book. And a lot of fantasy writers front-load their books in a similar way, kind of because of this precedent, and also because of the rush to explain all of the cool things that you've made. It's a natural impulse, it makes sense, but if you trust your reader to be patient. If you want to think of great openings, look at anime. Very few things, very few mediums as a whole start as quickly and as compellingly as good anime. Like Cowboy Bebop, you don't start like learning everything about these characters. You start with an adventure, and they're bounty hunters, and they're tracking this thing down. And then maybe around the sixth or seventh episode, you know, there's little hints about these characters. Then you get the episode that delves into so-and-so's mysterious past. And by that point, you really want his past. And this is the key. If you withhold information from the reader, if Tolkien would have held back some of this stuff so you're like, wow, how does this Shire place really work? And then would have given it to you maybe 60 pages in, it would have been a payoff instead of a burden. That's the whole secret-keeping thing. Again, if you're a certain type of storyteller.
So I had something.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure that we you know, let's not get pedantic about, like, the opening line and stuff. And I think Pat does himself the disservice. You know, the opening is, you know, doesn't have to be the first line. It can be a couple lines. So read Pat's full opening.
Right.
Well, and honestly,
oh, no, here it is. He's going to read it, Pat.
See, when I was writing down some cool first lines, I realized that some of them, there's a period after the first three words, but really it continues. And you don't stop with the first three words. You keep going. You feel like the first two sentences are really the opening line. And I think that's a point I definitely wanted to make. And to illustrate that, to illustrate a different, you know, kind of way to start, you don't have to start with getting shot in the groin and it's still interesting, is, of course, you know, The Name of the Wind, which is, it was night again. The Waystone Inn lay in silence, and it was a silence of three parts. It's very poetic. It's very interesting. It's not getting shot in the groin. It says it's not rock star, but it's really good. And honestly, I didn't want to stop when I was typing this out. I wanted to keep writing what he had, because, like, the next sentence is good. And the next, and you're like, that's really cool. And it's not somebody getting shot in the groin, but It's really good.
Honestly, since they keep bringing it up.
Sorry.
And because I do know it fairly well, I can practically sing it by this point in my life. My prologue, that first page, is almost a catalog of things that you should never do while opening a story. There's no characters introduced. The main thing I'm describing is silence, which is something that is not a thing, which is weird. The language is arty, you know, and a little pretentious. And so, yeah, I could, like, go down the list. But and so I was talking to my editor, and she goes, but I love the prologue. And I said, well, I love the prologue, too. And so we left it in. But it all comes down to the ultimate rule for any type of writing that is not particularly helpful except to reassure you. If it works, it works.
Yeah.
And you can do all the right things and have a train wreck. And you can do all the wrong things and sometimes it can work. And the only difference is the reader's response. You know, and so you know, it's not like putting together Lego where everything fits together tidily and it's like six tall, four across, and you have what you were aiming for, that brilliant hook that will sell a million books. There's a thousand ways to write a good opening passage and 100,000 bad ways to write a beginning, a bad opening passage. So...
And if the rest of the story bails out on the opening line, you know, if you have a tremendous opening line and then the rest is just a disaster, you know, descent into a fire pit, you know, that's not going to work out. I mean, you know, it needs to be able to measure up to the line that you've established for it. So, and one thing quickly, Paul, I just wanted to say, the other thing is, what we're talking about here are sort of rises and falls in reader retention, right? So that rather than thinking that you need to keep, you know, using the bang-bang example, bang-bang-bang-bang-bang-bang, you know, keep the reader's attention up here all the time, readers tend to read in waves, right? So they're interested, and then they kind of, you know, and you have some downtime where you're establishing things, and then they're interested, and then they're interested. So you don't have to think when you're setting out, my God, I must write a novel of 130, 140, 150,000 words, and every word must give them an adrenaline rush worthy of Statham's performance in Crank, right? Like,
I was just thinking of that.
It's not, you know, you don't need to do that. What you need to do is remember that attention spans will rise and fall, and you need to work with them. If you give them a big 150-page sequence of nothing, you will probably lose them. But you need to be aware that there have to be rises and fall in interest. Movie example, one of the best action movie ever made is Die Hard. Much of Die Hard does not involve Bruce Willis shooting people. It involves Bruce Willis sitting and talking to his friend Al. Those are the moments that make the action matter. Why is he jumping off the side of the building? Because he's sitting talking to Al. Why does the thing at the end where Al shoots the guy, why is this such a powerful moment? Because of what Bruce Willis learned from Al about the time that Al shot the kid, and that's why he doesn't pull the gun. It's not just about action, action, action. It's also about rises and falls. Sorry, Paul.
No, and that's a great place to think of your opening line. Sometimes you start at the top and then you relax a little bit. I saw Cirque du Soleil in terms of this, and this is a pacing issue.
Yeah.
It's tension issue. And tension is good, but with the one exception of Crank, I've never seen a story, and really, in storytelling terms, that movie doesn't get any credit, but it has done the impossible, which is have a movie that is nothing but raw action all the way through it. And it succeeds. I saw Cirque du Soleil, and there was the comedian, a guy who looked kind of like Einstein, and he would meet people at the gate like an usher, and then he'd take their tickets, and he'd walk them around way down by the bottom, and then he'd look at the tickets, and then he'd go, and he'd point way up, and they'd walk all the way up there, and he has these people's tickets, and so they're following him all over the stadium while the seats are filling up. And then he'd finally, he'd start walking across the aisles. He'd climb over seats, and the people keep following him. And finally, he'd just throw the tickets up in the air and quit, go back and get a new group of people who hadn't seen him do this. He would do this again and again while the stadium was filling up. And he was the comic relief. And the term comic relief is really important in terms of tension, because these Cirque du Soleil people were doing incredible things, like this... like trapeze stuff where I'm like, someone is going to fucking die. You know, and I'm just, and you're like,
oh. Yeah.
And then it gets done. If they would have followed it up with more trapeze, I couldn't have handled it, and it couldn't have impressed me because I was already completely thrilled. Then the comedian comes on, and he does something, and I laugh, and I, And then, like, you know, sword fight. I'm like, oh, my God, you know. It needs to go up and down and up and down. And so you need to know, sometimes your opening line can start on kind of a down or on setting. The road to Cinnabar was lined with trash can fires and the hollowed out shells of school buses. Did I get it right?
Yeah, that's it. I love that line.
I haven't even read the book, but I read the opening line, set the book down, and it's been stuck in my head forever. That's just setting. It's not bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, I have a couple of things maybe you can keep in mind, and if you're taking notes, you know, is your opening line about character? There's one to write down. Is it setting? Is it action? Is it a question? Is it more poetic? Is it a combination of a few of those? I have just a couple to read, and you know, I'm sure we'll get into some other topics. So here's one on character. See if you can remember this one. I always get the shakes before a drop. It's Robert Heinlein. Starship Troopers, 1959. Here's another character one. The day they gave me my mask was the first day I felt truly alive. That's Michael Stackpole, The Dark Glory War, one of my favorite fantasy series. Here's a combination one that blends many different things, and I think it's pretty good. In the week before their departure to Arrakis, when all the final scurrying about had reached a nearly unbearable frenzy, an old crone came to visit the mother of the boy, Paul.
Dude.
Yeah.
It's good. Damn. Awesome. You know, Frank Herbert, 1965.
That old. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I have one more that I think it's a new book, and I'm going to read it to you. Here it is. On one otherwise normal Tuesday evening, I had the chance to live the American dream, period. I was able to throw my incompetent jackass of a boss from a 14th-story window.
A lot of implied story there.
That's a friend of mine. It's Larry Correa. His new book from Bain just came out, Monster Hunter International. That's 2009. Once again, that's two sentences, right? But you don't stop. You keep going. So I think some of the greatest first lines can be a combination, but, you know, the simple idea sometimes is the best. Going with just a few words. I hemmed and hawed about the first line of The Golden Cord forever and ever and rewrote it a million times. And then for like months, like 6 or 9 months, it was set. And then like right before the deadline, my editor wrote me back and went, you know, I think you could start this a little bit better. And I'm like, where's the gun? You know, I mean, I've rewritten it a million times. And it finally, it turned into a really, really simple line. I don't know if it's like, it's not a total home run. It's simple, and I like it. It's italics, it's a thought, and it's just three words. Don't look back. And it works for that. It worked. And I just went to something very, very simple. So my advice to you is, if you're stuck in the, you know, nearly paragraph-sized first line, try just doing a really, really simple one if you're stuck in that big Baroque long thing that, you know, everybody used to do 100 years ago. And just let it sit there and enjoy it. And then keep in mind what kind of story you're telling. Is it more poetic, like The Name of the Wind? Is it a thriller? You know, is it more about setting? You know, is setting up a romance? You know, you gotta talk about, you know, Mr. Darcy and Elizabeth Bennet. You know, what?
We're at about 5 minutes before we're going to have to quit, so I thought I would give the chance to ask a few questions, if you have any.
Can I do a quick wrap-up?
If there aren't any questions, and this might not be a question-heavy one, we can just keep up here. So, quick opportunity. I hate not giving the opportunity. Quick question?
What do you think about using dialogue as the opening?
I think it's a great way of starting in the middle of a scene. If you can pull off convincing dialogue.
So Orson Scott Card, see if you remember what this is. I've watched through his eyes, I've listened through his ears, and I tell you, he's the one. Or at least, as close as we're going to get.
Yeah.
That's Ender's Game, 1985. It's dialogue.
Yeah, I think it's fair. Wrap?
Well, just maybe I'll skip the quotes. I'll say one quote because I think this is interesting. This is a book that Diana Guild put out, and I forget the name of the book, excuse me, but some of you might know it. I went to Iraq a soldier and came back a vampire.
That quote. There you go.
Wow.
So we talked about... what's that?
Nymphos of Wrong Flags, I believe?
Maybe. I don't know the title. So we're kind of talking about what openings do, and that one actually tells the idea of the story right off the bat, and that's a really cool twist. I did want to mention just a couple of books. Let me read this real quick. This is from the first five pages, and this is by Noah Lukman, and he's actually taking this quote from Strunk and White's Elements of Style. Vigorous writing is concise. A sentence should contain no unnecessary words, a paragraph no unnecessary sentences, for the same reason that a drawing should have no unnecessary lines, and a machine no unnecessary parts. This requires not that the writer make all his sentences short, or that he avoid all detail and treat his subjects only in outline, but that every word tell. Okay, so the reason I wanted to mention this, the first five pages is actually a misnomer, and Lukman knows it. It's really about writing in general. But he brings up the notion that the things that you do in the first five pages are the things that you'll do in the second five pages and the next five pages, for the whole book. So it's important to worry about the beginning, but don't forget about everything else. Don't obsess, in other words. The other book that I want to mention is Nancy Kress's Beginnings, Middles, and Ends. It's the best book that I know of that really talks about what a beginning is supposed to do. She really breaks it down very well. Same thing with the middles and the ends. It's a very good book. So that's all I wanted to cover, and we could open it up to more questions if we
would have
one more closing comment.
No, I don't have a particular pithy closing comment.
any other questions that might have come up? And now I'm going to do the teacher pause, which gives maybe bashful people the opportunity to actually raise their hand if they want to, as I stall.
We'll get really uncomfortable because it's
and
so
then we
quiet.
Can always talk later.
There we go, see?
How did you guys make it to this whole panel about mentioning the Bowler Lipton contest?
Don't know about it.
The worst, the dark and stormy night, the worst possible.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Because
I've heard
this
of that.
Is great. That's why he said cleverly.
I have heard of it. It might be a good thing to study. Of what not to do. Although I will say, if you focus too much, if you like look at some of that, it might do nothing more than make you paranoid of mockery.
Right.
And writing from a place of fear is not a good way to produce something that is wonderful, because it's very easy to be afraid of doing something bold and potentially stupid, but it's those bold, potentially stupid things that actually end up working sometimes. That's a hard thing to come to grips with. Did you have a question, too? Did I see a hand?
Actually, we came in a few minutes late. Did each of you read your opening lines at the start of this?
We've been talking about different opening lines all the way through.
Did you read your opening lines before we finished?
Pat's written.
Mine's already been mentioned.
Pretty well.
And Paul mentioned his. Do you want to do yours real quick? Can you remember it?
Thousands of words, you expect more than number 10.
Torek Ilmon, the most recent member of a farmer's bloodline stretching back centuries, perhaps even before the dreamer's first dream, wiped beads of sweat from his brow before bending to drive his hoe into the earth.
It's, and in that particular case, the hope is that people will think, Torek Ilmon, dreamer, farmer, read the next one. And then within a page, there's this horrible sound coming from the woods that he goes to investigate, and within three pages, something bad happens to this guy, and you want to know, presumably or hopefully, why. And I will give you one other from my other book, which is in progress, or which is finished, which is on submission, and it is, on the day that Icarus fell into the volcano, I was out looking for flame petals with Rick. And the hope, therefore, is people are going to go, what in God's, what? And then, you know, if you get the what, then maybe they'll get to the next stage. And I forgot something else I was going to mention quickly about. Oh, yes, one thing very quickly about sort of focusing on good versus bad. I strongly think that going after
constantly exploring the bad is not a good idea. I don't think it's a good idea as a writer. I don't even think it's a good idea as a person. Leaving aside the Eye of Argon, which is funny just because it's the Eye of Argon, and you know, but leaving that aside, I think you should focus your attention on what works the best. Leave the amateur stuff to, you know, people who want to read amateur stuff. Focus on the best of what's out there, in my opinion. So, yeah.
Jeff, can you remember one of yours?
Paul actually wrote one down. This is from a story called "And a Girl Named Rose." I am not, as they say, human. It's a story about an AI and a generation ship sort of coming away.
And that does put us at time. Thank you so much for coming. And if you did not put up your ticket, if you came in a little late, if we could get your tickets, that'd be great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Good job, Pat.
Yay, us.
Because I read that pages ago, right?